I just felt like it was a little bit of a kick in the balls, to be honest.
It came a lot sooner than I thought that I would be the oldest player on the team.
That's all you got, brother. That's all you got.
The word of the day would have been hyper-realism.
We're bad at soccer, but we're good on a bagel.
Holding the high line with Rabbi and Red, talking the rapids and turning heads, with questions from you and analysis. In your car, in your home, thank you for tuning to Holding the High Line.
Hello, Colorado Rapids fans. This is Holding the High Line with Rabbi and Red. It is Monday, March 11th, 2024, for just the second time ever and the first time with fans properly in the crowd. The Colorado Rapids have gone into Sandy, Utah and taken 3 points from Real Salt Lake. Rafael Navajo opened his 2024 account. Cole Bassett scored in his 100th appearance for the Burgundy and Blue. And Ollie LaRaz is growing some hair on his ginger chest. Oh, and Jasper Lofelson got his revenge tour against Pablo Mastroianni. Joining me now to celebrate the size of this dub, the Oracle of Pittsburgh, Rabbi Mark Goodman.
Thanks, Matt. That is a reference to my son's investing acumen and my lack thereof. It's good to see you, buddy. Here's a question that kind of popped up the other day. Someone threw out the possibility that Ollie LaRaz should be referred to as the Ginger Ninja. As our reigning expert on all things ginger, and with the reference to the knowledge to the fact that the original Ginger Ninja of the Colorado Rapids, at least according to most fans, was Jeff Larenowicz, should we call Ollie LaRaz Ginger Ninja, or should he get his own nickname, or is he like Ginger Junior, Ginger Ninja Junior, which is a mouthful? I don't know. Does he need his own nickname? Are there more ginger soccer nicknames than just Ginger Ninja? Why are we using this? Is there a new idea?
Well, we like that it almost rhymes, Mark. You know, it's the, you know, ninja, ginger, like the, you know, the ER and the A in not a word that starts with N and is racist is fun to say. As the resident ginger who both claims Jeff Larenowicz and Ollie LaRaz, I've once described myself on this podcast as the president of the People's Republic of Ollie LaRaz. Mark, mm-hmm. The laptop with which I am watching you from is currently sitting on the Jeff Larenowicz Memorial Kitchen Island. I feel like we need to see a little bit more bite from Ollie. We need to see the brilliance of what Jeff Larenowicz was able to do was him arriving late or catching up to a play. He was not a fast player, but he was fast in a 5 to 7 yard situation in terms of looking like he was out of the race to disrupt a play and then disrupting something, winning the ball, and then passing it to Pablo so that then Pablo could go do something further upfield, Mark. To use our analogy that we love about the 2016 Rapids team, he was the Michael Azira in this analogy. I think if we are going to bestow upon Oliver LaRaz the Ginger Ninja nickname, we just see a little bit more from that. And as we'll come on to with our thoughts on him starting and performing in the Rocky Mountain Cup on Saturday, there's some good things, but the thing that he's not good at yet is the thing that Jeff Larenowicz was great at. So I am withholding we should start making those comparisons just because he's a holding midfielder who happens to also be a redhead. He does have brighter red hair than Jeff Larenowicz. Larenowicz had more burgundy, almost brownish hair, depending on the lighting. I feel like we need to get Jeff's opinion on this. I feel like if someone has a nickname and then we bestow that nickname onto someone else, that should be with the blessing of the person who originally bore the nickname. Mm. And I do think there should be the opportunity. I am a big fan of we ask the players what they think about the nickname. So, Mark, Danny Wilson did not particularly care for the title of Scottish Salmon, or he and Jack objected to the fact that the term that they used to describe that was actually a verb, not a noun. And so I thought it was a little bit weird when fans started referring to Keegan Rosenberry as Mr. Rapid. I thought that was more of a Cole Bassett, maybe now a Sam Bynes nickname that you could have. Mm. But in, you know, audio that I featured on the Burgundy Wave Patreon and in an article that I since wrote right before the start of the season, he said that he's okay with the nickname and the way that he understands it, you know, having been around a long time, having adopted the club, being more of a Colorado convert rather than a transplant, he's okay with the nickname. I feel like before any of this happens, someone in the media, probably me, will ask Ollie what he thinks of the nickname, and if he says, no, I don't prefer that, here's the nickname I had in the academy, we should provide that opportunity. Mark, what do you think, what is the biggest thing that Oliver LaRoz could learn from when Neil Emblem sits down with him in a one-on-one video session and shows him game tape of 2010 Jeff Lorenowitz?
Well, I'm not as big an expert on 2010 Jeff Lorenowitz as you are, I would suppose, but I do know kind of more later career Jeff Lorenowitz from watching him. My take on Ollie LaRoz is he needs to destroy more destroyerly. He needs to be a little bit more Kyle Beckerman, a little bit more N'Golo Kanté. That means the ability, which is not easy, and Michael Azira also, the ability to run at great speed to break up a play and arrive at either just the right time or know how to slow down when necessary in order to like not like obliterate the other dude and commit a red card offense. So it's a difficult thing, and I think it's something that Connor Ronan doesn't really do. And I'm not saying that as a negative to either player. Covering ground and tackling balls at a medium pace that is not reckless is a better thing than doing a phenomenal job of charging full speed at somebody, and then when you get to the ball, committing a red card studs up foul. Like, that you don't want to do. And that's what made N'Golo Kanté one of the best players I've ever seen at anything, which was he was really fast, he could cover a lot of ground, but when he got to the ball, he was in control. And that's a hard skill to learn, and it's something that I think LaRoz is going to need, assuming that LaRoz is. Now, I already think LaRoz is at the level of kind of like pivot passing that a player 10 years his senior should be at. I mean, he's a phenomenal passer.
That that Arizona Barcelona Academy time has done him well in the 5v2 rondos.
Yeah, and in pressure also, like, you know, players kind of collapsing on him, he does a great job. So that's what Neil Emblem probably is going to tell him. Although, you know, if you're listening to this podcast, Ollie, we love you. We think you're phenomenal. You know, baby steps to the kitchen. Like, you don't have to learn all the things. You don't have to be N'Golo Kanté tomorrow for us to love you. We love you now.
Ollie, since you are listening to this, we would love for you to become N'Golo Kanté tomorrow. That'd be great. I'd love to have $100 million holding midfielder in the Rapids as a homegrown right now.
Matt, you and I both know that if he became N'Golo Kanté tomorrow, we'd sell him within a second, and then we wouldn't have him anymore.
Can you imagine how much money, Mark, that Porik Smith would waste on backwater Europeans that they get that the scouting team gets hyped up on because of one metric? If they suddenly had $100 million injected into their coffers.
Matt, we could have goalkeepers from all of the former Yugoslavian republics. We could have one from Serbia, one from Montenegro, one from Slovenia. We could Croatia.
We could sign Luka Modric as a goalkeeper DP. That's how much money we would have.
Nice.
Okay, listeners, let us know what you think. What do you think of the parallels and the comparisons between Big Red and then currently Connor Ronan and then Ollie LaRoz? Do you like the nickname? What do you think about soccer player nicknames? How do you go about thinking and changing those? What do you think about when it comes to soccer player nicknames? Do you have any idea for nicknames for players on the team? That is HTHL asks you. Mark, what was it? Right around 24 hours ago at time of recording, the U.S. women's national team played Brazil in the inaugural CONCACAF W Gold Cup final, and they won by a score of 1-0. Lindsey Horan scoring in first half stoppage time, and the U.S. ultimately showing out a very professional final 20-30 minutes for me, Mark, as a team that, despite having some young players, have some young players who are hungry, that saw the moment to both win a major piece of silverware with their national team, being new to the national team, and also seeing the opportunity to embed themselves in the roster for this upcoming Olympics in Paris this summer, and then obviously a Women's World Cup, which the U.S. may be hosting possibly. And juxtaposing that, Mark, with some of the veterans who failed in Australia and New Zealand last summer, who ultimately then restored the U.S. back to winning a major piece of silverware and doing against what I think is one of the best Brazil teams this exists in the times that I have been watching women's soccer, watching WOSO. Rabbi, your thoughts on the final and your thoughts on the great Horan delivering once again in a final for the USWNT.
We're so very proud of Colorado native Lindsey Horan. There are a couple of interesting things. I mean, I think the rise of Trinity Rodman is something we've all been excited about. I love the fact that they started Rose Lavelle at 28 years old, Trinity Rodman at 21 years old, and Alex Morgan at 34 years old up front and up top altogether. It's just a wide variety of kind of how the USWNT is rolling these days. We are still, I think, because of Alex Morgan, waiting for some of those like former generation players to rotate out and go on for the next group. And that is an interesting thing to keep an eye on as the women's team eyes their next World Cup of like who's going to, because I don't think Alex Morgan is going to be there as a starter. So the question then becomes, who's the go-to striker? There's a couple other positions where that's probably also like a question. Crystal Dunn, who is like a natural forward wing, who's been playing for the women's national team as a left fullback for her entire career, who replaces the ageless wonder, the wonderful, amazing Crystal Dunn, is a fantastic thing. And will she actually be a natural fullback? It's another question. Alyssa Nair probably will be the goalkeeper to beat even 3 years from now. It is a good question, though, whether she will still be there. So there's some really good questions in WOSO these days. A lot of excitement. I just want to give one quick shout out to a WOSO player who was raised here in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, at the NWSL draft a couple weeks ago. Landy Mertz, who was a graduate student and maybe just a senior, I'm not sure. I think she had an extra year of eligibility because of COVID, but at Pitt, was drafted, I believe, by the North Carolina Courage. She's one of only two professional soccer players who's come out of the University of Pittsburgh, the other being Athalie Palomo, a fullback who plays in Liga MX Femenil, the women's league in Mexico. So that's just a lot of fun. Landy is probably not going to wake the women's national team, but it is really phenomenal to just think that, you know, there is depth in the women's game and there's a lot of talent out there and there's a lot of expansion going on in NWSL year over year. So I think there's a lot of good things coming for this team. Good job to the women's national team. I do think that this wasn't quite a statement win. I think a statement win would have been a total bare bottom spanking of Brazil, who are a phenomenal national team with Debinha, you know, kind of running the show in the middle. But this was a solid performance, but not a spectacular performance.
I agree that the final wasn't a statement win, Mark. I was really impressed to see after just the mess that was the final group stage game against Mexico, them comprehensively dominate a Colombia team that I do think is on the up. And, you know, I think the USA-Canada has been a constant rivalry that normally the U.S. women have been the big sisters in. But to see through the adversity and the uncertainty that came, which is them playing in a mud puddle pitch. Mark, I don't know if you knew this, but a fellow friend of the podcast and mutual colleague, Rachel Krieger, president of the North American Soccer Reporters, was actually at Philadelphia Union versus Seattle Sounders. And so I'm in a group chat of former Last Word on Sports people talking with all of them. And I jokingly said to Rachel, so, you know, hey, Rachel, just so we confirm, we make women play when it's a torrential downpour and the field is a mud pit, but we don't make the men play when that's the circumstances. So, you know,
we also make the men play when there's 4 inches of snow on the field, but not when there's 2 inches of water on the field. So it's a very confusing meteorological bouillabaisse we have going on in how soccer things are decided to go forward.
Yeah, so in any case, I think the women saw that out against Canada, and look, when it's Canada and when the conditions are weird and non-ideal, at that point, it's just find a way to survive. And I think the young players showed up really good. Obviously, you know, not Mallory Swanson, who is Sophia Smith, scored the goal to help see the team through to penalties, and then they took care of business in penalties. The Colorado girls did, and then Alyssa Nair got some big stops as well. So that showed a level of resilience and togetherness and commitment from a mentality standpoint that I don't think was there this summer. I think if that game was being played, if it was a torrential downpour in a knockout game against Canada in New Zealand or in Australia, then I think that U.S. women's team from the summer loses that game. So I think there's a good mesh of the veterans who are not resting on their laurels because they rode the coattails of the 2019 World Cup. We could say that maybe the players you would put in that category would be Alyssa Nair, Lindsey Horan, and then Roosevelt. They're not doing that in ways that I felt the players who since retired from the national team did this past summer, having won the Women's World Cup twice. So they're still doing it. And obviously there's a bunch of young players who are not part of that legacy at all because they're so new to the team. So I thought it was a good result and great that the Colorado girls were involved. Right now, Mark, for me, from a Colorado WOSO perspective, is whether or not Mallory Swanson is able to come back from her injury and then do anything with the Chicago Red Stars in time to have any relevance in the squad for the Olympics. But it's certainly looking up, and I'm really excited to see what those players are able to do. And there's a bunch of other Colorado-based players in the NWSL with ties to Colorado, which other people will be covering. Mark, anything else WOSO that we want to talk about, or shall we move on to the Rocky Mountain Cup?
Let's talk Colorado Rapids soccer.
Listeners, this past Saturday, the Colorado Rapids went into the Riot and they won by a score of 2-1. Just one change from the first two starting 11s that we saw from Chris Armas, Omir Fernandez in for Calvin Harris. In the broadcast, Mark, I'm not sure if you were listening to Cello en Español or if you were listening to the English language broadcast, but there were a few comments made about how Calvin Harris was directly involved in both the goals that the Rapids scored so far this season, and what did he do to get dropped for Omir Fernandez, albeit who has a good penchant for scoring in derbies. You had play stop in the opening 11 minutes or so, Mark, which was a little bit concerning. Ollie Larraz went down and was holding his wrist and got a wrap, I don't know, a mini cast, something on his wrist. And then in the 11th minute, Connor Ronan was subbed out with a knee injury with what Chris Armas then later described as being precautionary pain in the knee, but he seemed to be okay. I'll try to get an update later this week, folks. You know, we are podcasting on Monday, and Monday's normally an off day for the team, but it doesn't look like it's too serious. In any case, Jasper Loffelson finally makes his debut in burgundy and blue, and what a better time to do it than, you know, in his return to America First Field and to play Real Salt Lake. And then after that, it was pretty much all RSL. They had better intensity for me. I thought they did a better job in transition, and they were tacking down that right flank consistently, Mark. And I don't know if that's because Pablo really likes what Hidalgo, the fullback, was doing in previous weeks, but on some level, the fact that they did it consistently and did it with so much success in the first half, that has to be an indictment of something about the shape or just individually what Jordi Mihailovic and Sam Vines were doing from a defensive work rate standpoint. Rafael Navajo had a couple chances. He got a shot that was saved by Beavers, the young goalkeeper. There were a number of absences and changes, Mark. We covered those last week, but one that I was not expecting was Zach McMath was sitting on the bench for Beavers in goal. I thought Beavers did a really good job with some of the shots that he faced. RSL opens the scoring in the 22nd minute. Turnover at midfield. Jordi Mihailovic with a telegraph pass to Jasper Loffelson, who then gets double teamed and the ball gets turned over. And then it leads to a Eneli. I'm not sure how to pronounce that. Eneli. Who effectively has a tap-in on the back post. Andreas Mexo and Keegan Rosenberry once again not covering themselves in glory in terms of defending inside the six. Colorado doesn't have the same level of intensity that they need. Double pivot midfield is still trying to figure things out. I don't think Jasper was good on the ball. I think he ran around a lot. I think he tried to get stuck in. He didn't do a very good job of that, but the Rapids had life in the 41st minute when Eneli, the goal scorer, gets called for a handball. There was a slight push from Larraz, but I don't think there's any question. Eneli, hand stretched out and then also stretching out towards the ball. He's definitely making himself big. And Rafael Navajo opens his 2024 Rapids account with a nice stutter step, sending Beavers the other way. Mark, and then the second half really got stretched for me. You know, the Rapids weren't winning the XG battle, but it was going back and forth. Gomez was absolutely cooking on that right side for RSL. Chicho Arango could have had a brace, maybe even a hat trick on his best day, but he was kept off the score sheet. And then it was just a matter of which team going in transition was going to take advantage of the opportunity that they had and be ruthless, and then were they going to be able to see out the game? And the answer to those questions were yes and yes. Normally, you think that'd be RSL, but in the 70th minute, turnover in the defensive third for the Rapids. Cole Bassett takes the ball basically from midfield, lays it off to Sam Vines. Vines with a non-threatening cross into the box, and it falls fortuitously for Cole Bassett. His patented late run into the box, second touch off the bounce off the pitch, and then into the far side netting. He scores in his 100th appearance for the Colorado Rapids. And the Rapids see things out, Mark. A couple big saves from From Zach Steffen. You had a couple chances in transition. Kevin Cabral comes in and could have put it away, but he was non-threatening. Moise Bumbito with some really big chances, with some really big defensive plays as well, and just a back line that kept it really simple, and there were balls that were in dangerous areas that, for the most part, did not lead to dangerous shots on goal. Rabbi, where would you like to start with your good thing from just the Rapids' second ever win in Rio Tinto?
I had a great time with this game, even though it was a little bit confusing. So as you said, Matt, the Colorado Rapids won a game kind of against the run of play to some degree. Possession stats were overwhelming for RSL. They had 62% possession to the Rapids, 38% possession. Remember that possession is determined not by time of possession of the ball, but rather by number of passed and received. But that being said, it's very frequent that you exceed the opponent in time of possession when you are winning, because you absorb pressure and you kind of sit back. The Rapids, contrary to this, were losing on time of possession even when they were ahead in the game, even when they were behind in the game or when the score was even. So it was very interesting to me that, like, they went in there, and I wouldn't say that they were playing to win on the counter or to take the ball on the counter. I think they were just, like, struggling to possess, especially in the first 35 minutes, and maybe you could even say the first 60 minutes. And then after they got the second goal, it was like, well, I don't need the ball anyway. So I think that was an interesting thing to watch from a tactical perspective for me. It's an interesting question going forward as to whether this team is going to try and win games that way in the future or not. I thought Sam Vines was as free and easy and out there as I've ever seen him be in the old days. I saw moments where he was pressing all the way up like a striker and was really kind of attacking. A lot of fans noted, and I think I need to go back and, like, double check to see this, but a lot of folks were really, really happy with Moise Bombito's performance, the way he kind of stood tall at a lot of positions, bodied up men. Another thing that I noticed about this game, which was disconcerting, was how physical the game got early and how violent it got, and how the referees didn't seem to be able to manage that. There were a bunch of plays where I thought RSL committed rough fouls or kind of reckless play, and they weren't really admonished properly. I felt like in the first 30 to 45 minutes, the game looked like it was ready to get out of hand in terms of, like, guys going in at each other. And those two injuries early on were great examples of that. The Rapids got into spots where, I mean, Ollie's wrist injury upon replay was not related to violent play by RSL, but it was related to kind of the clattering of bodies kind of coming together over and over again at the beginning. So there was a lack of kind of care and control at the beginning that was a little worrisome. But I thought that the Rapids handled that better. RSL looked like they were kind of playing recklessly and close to a red card-y type. They didn't commit any red cards, don't misunderstand me, but, like, they were always kind of, like, walking that edge between, like, a reckless foul that could have, if it had gone the wrong way, gone the wrong way. Cole Bassett looked really, really good for long stretches of this game. Bassett has this thing that I don't think I've talked about a lot in at least 6 months, if not a year, which is he has this thing that not a lot of other players do, where he knows how to, he's dribbling the ball, and an opponent is kind of in front of him, and he takes a bunch of kind of, like, lateral, not step overs, but, like, sweep overs, where he kind of shimmies to the side. And I've used the phrase Cole Bassett shimmying many, many times. He really opens up space and kind of reorients himself in ways that are really, really wonderful when he's both on the ball and when he's kind of pinned into difficult positions. He kind of finds ways of cutting back and zigging and zagging in certain ways that create new angles of pass that wouldn't have otherwise happened. And they're very subtle. They're very, like, he's really good. I think Cole Bassett's best asset is this kind of shoulder shimmy head fake that he kind of does. It's just absolutely one of my favorite things to see. And he did it in, like, two or three spots in this game. The other thing about Cole Bassett, just to keep singing his praises, by the way, Foot Mob has him as the highest rated Colorado Rapids player at, like, I think at 8.6. But it's the intangibles that I want to talk about, which is that shimmy to get out of traffic and to kind of create new angles that force the opponent to kind of reorient their defense. The other thing that Cole Bassett does really well, he did it a couple years ago when the Rapids were scoring a lot and when the team was good. He did not do it much last year when we were really bad, is the late arrival goal, right? Cole Bassett arriving late in the box and banging it home. That's like the Cole Bassett thing. And that is how he scored his second goal. That is like, it was a textbook kind of Cole Bassett kind of play. And I think he's maybe feeling it. I think having Sam Vines alongside him helps that a lot. I think Ali Larraz really helps that a lot. That's a combo that we talked about week one, that we felt like there was some mojo there. And it just didn't kind of, because week one was such a hot mess for us when we lost 4-1 to Portland. It didn't have time to percolate. It didn't quite kind of gel. And I think that that's kind of a thing that we could see, kind of the rap kids doing their thing, like setting their flow, getting it together, and creating and converting. So I want to see more with Sam Vines involved in that situation, but I think overwhelmingly this was a very exciting performance for the Rapids, even though there are things that we can improve upon.
Moise Bombito has been absolutely fantastic. Brian Jennings had a really good article for Burgundy Wave that dropped today that I'll include in the show notes for people who want to see it. But just after where I thought he was caught chasing shadows, not any worse than any of the other back line in the game against Portland. You know, he had big moments against Nashville, not necessarily a big performance. And he was absolutely not at fault on the goal that RSL scored. And I thought he was one of the most important defenders when the Rapids were really under the gun early in the first half before the goal, early in the second half before either team had scored, and then late after the Rapids had scored, you know, with those final 20 minutes to play. So I thought he was really good. Mark Zach Steffen, for me now, has made 3 saves in 3 MLS games that I do not think 2023 William Yarbrough before the injury or Marco Ilicha would have saved as well. So the Rapids are getting value in terms of the expected saves to actual saves in the case of their goalkeeper. And then 2, not really good things, Mark, but just other things that I think are worth noting is I've seen Keegan Rosenberry taking throw-ins, and they've been more long throw-ins. And that's something that we have not seen. We didn't see a whole lot of last year. And so I'm wondering if that's something that's more of an emphasis for Chris Armas, or if that's a value net delta that Chris Sharpie has identified and that they're now trying to take advantage of. And then I guess we'll, the last thing, I've got some good things, Mark, but they're really big things, is that we've seen the Rapids identify what's going on with the officiating, and then they play it almost to their disadvantage, like they self-destruct with the emotions and the frustrations about what's going on around the game. And I think you saw it very clearly. The Rapids realized that the officiating was a little bit liberal to start the match, and then the Scabby, the ref, then quickly did kind of a heel turn, I'd say about 55th, 60th minute or so, in terms of trying to get control of the match a little bit more. I think it started with that Loftleson yellow card, if I'm not mistaken. And the Rapids just kind of realized that they could be a little bit ticky-tack, that the referee wasn't going to call something that was significant embellishment, and they were going to be able to slow the game down and kill the game off. And that's we'll get to my big thing on a bigger piece, but that was very, in the context of the Rocky Mountain Cup, that was very RSL of them. And that was something that normally RSL does spectacularly from a poop house standpoint in this derby. And the Rapids did it fantastically, and they did it to the frustration of RSL. RSL got wound up. Their players got frustrated between the whistles. They were the ones then initiating the physicality. You know, in a battle, in a fight, the less angry person always win. And the Rapids got in RSL's head, and the referee let it happen. The Rapids took advantage of the way that the official was officiating the game, and in doing so, frustrated RSL. And it was so beautiful to see, Mark, because at the end of the game, what do you have? You have the entire crowd chanting, "Ref, you suck." And so that is normally to see the Rapids give RSL one of the many medicines that the Rapids have to take when they go to Sandy, Utah, was absolutely fantastic. Mark, I'll throw it to you, and then you can take on bad thing. Omir Fernandez has looked really good on the ball in transition for me, and he was really good from a pressing standpoint. But in terms of the front line of the press, I didn't see a whole lot from him outside of that. And the two or three big chances that he's had, between the one big chance he had against Nashville, and then I think he had a really good look in the first half of this game as well, were completely off target. And that's just giving me very, you know, almost like Jonathan Lewis plus energy. And that's something that it's his first couple games with the team. He, you know, had a limited preseason because of a minor knock that he was dealing with and everything. But that's kind of a concern I have. And that in the context of if Chris Armas is a completely objective meritocratic coach in terms of who's getting playing time, I don't know that Calvin Harris deserved to be dropped from this lineup. But Mark, your thoughts on Omer Fernandez, and then what bad things do you have?
I wasn't as worried about Omer Fernandez. I thought he had a couple nice plays on the ball. But yeah, I think you do make a good point about his overall quality in the match. I think his just kind of ability to combine with the attackers was a work in progress, shall we say. So we'll see where that goes. Bad things. Rafael Navajo is still figuring it out. I feel like he got service in the box on one or two plays and couldn't find the end of it. Some of that is the opponent. Some of that is his service, and some of that is him. But just kind of like, you know, he got on the scoreboard. He got his first goal of 2024, which is great. But it was a PK, and I'm not as excited about PK goals. An additional kind of like worry about this team was overall, you know, we were dominated on the ball, and we looked like we were playing to, you know, produce something in transition or on the counter. I think there were also moments at which the defensive idea that the team was attempting to approach the game with wasn't really working, which is kind of like a mid-block with press and turnover. There wasn't as much pressing in this game as I might have expected. I suppose that was the plan from Chris Armas, which is be patient and see what happens. But, you know, I think also, to be honest, you know, this was a very even game that worked out to be a 2-1 win for the Rapids, because of, you know, a lucky break on a handball for the Rapids. And I think, you know, in terms of expected goals, the teams were almost identical. Expected goals from open play, the Rapids were absolutely hammered. RSL had a 1.47 XG in open play versus the Rapids 0.54. So the reason that we have that huge expected goals jump is because the Rapids had a free kick and a penalty kick that doesn't count in the XG open play statistic. So that tells you a lot about how the Rapids did at both being on the ball, making successful passes, getting successful passes that ended up in the final third, and then those final passes turning into shots. We didn't do very well at that. That's not going to work long term. You can't do that for 30 more games and win. If the Rapids played like they did against RSL, they will probably win one game and lose two games the rest of the way, or, you know, grind out a couple of draws and ultimately end the season with, you know, 12 wins, 12 losses, 10 ties. You know what I mean? And that'll get you into the playoffs, but it's not impressive. So that's, I think, where the Rapids are at, which is that they can produce acceptable results. Can they produce convincing results is a really good question.
Yeah, no, Mark, I'm concerned. I feel pretty confident in saying what the Rapids have played six halves of soccer so far this season, and they've started, what, maybe two on the front foot, two with intensity, second half against Portland. Let's put an asterisk on that. It was 4-0 at halftime. Portland was always going to come out and be conservative. And the only other one I'd really say would be the second half against Nashville. And so for a new coach who comes in, who preaches like we're going to be high energy, we're going to play with intensity, we're going to be an attacking team, for them to come out and be relatively flat, or at least on the back foot relative to their opponents, is that something that Chris Armas has dialed back from his, you know, super energetic first, you know, head coach announcement press conference where everybody says, you know, all the good things? You know, Mark, no, other than maybe Jose Mourinho, nobody's ever come in, and Big Sam, no head coach has ever come in with their introductory press conference and being like, no, we're going to play boring, negative defensive soccer and a 0-0 draw on the road or a 1-1 draw against our rival in a game where we're completely outplayed in all the metrics, that's good enough for us. That's good enough for you supporters. You're going to take it and you're going to like it, kind of a thing. So is this just situational? Does this go back to the little suggestions that I've gotten that Armas has big ideas for what his system is going to be, but because the system is new and complex, because the players are new, that he doesn't want to overload them with information, and he wants to present information and implement his system incrementally in a way that matches up with what they're able to do physically, is a question that I have and something that I want to see. And I'd love to see, Mark, their next, their next home game's not going to be for a couple of weeks, obviously. But like I'd love to see just the game where just they come out and they immediately put the opponent under the gun in the first 15 or 20 minutes. And we haven't really seen that yet. And so that's something that I'm not worried about it, but I'm cognizant of it as of right now. Other bad things that we have to say, Mark, as we mentioned, Connor Ronan's knee injury, as you know, it doesn't appear to be serious, but as we'll get to in a little bit with the Tom Bogert bomb, I think it's a valid question who's playing there, if he's out for more than a few games, and what does that look like, and whether or not Jasper Lofelson's going to have to be way better than he was to start the game, and, you know, Oliver Ross is going to have to grow some more hair on his chest. Mark, Jordi Mihailović has, similar to Omer Fernandez, has looked good when he's had the ball in the attacking third, and when he can find space or when he can do something with it. He's very progressive in that regard. Every single time that he's gotten the ball and he has a half step on an opponent, he has done something positive that really nobody else on this team other than Cole Bassett is doing. And I'd say Jordy's doing it more often. Jordy is doing it more times with fewer touches in those same situations than Bassett is doing. But I'm still seeing someone who, for the most part, when he does not have the ball at his feet, is largely anonymous in the game. I'm not seeing that pressing intensity that I do see from Navajo. I do see from Cole Bassett, and I've seen from Omer Fernandez now off the bench and then as a starter. Again, he's a new player. He's got a lot going on the pitch. He's got a baby on the way. He just got engaged. There's a lot going on in his life. These things take time, and maybe it'll take a couple more games to set in. But as we've mentioned, the Rapids have several canaries in the coal mine, and a few of them, when it comes to the European players coming back, is based on the teams that they were at and those clubs in those leagues. Belgium for Sam Vines, the Netherlands for Jordi Mihailović, and then we can include Cole Bassett in the case of Holland. And I wouldn't say that we include Zach Steffen in this conversation, because Manchester City burns money for fun. Is that those clubs and those countries do not buy a guy with national team upside and then sell him a year or two or three later at a significant loss. And if they were willing to cut bait at, reportedly a 50% loss in the case of Jordy, and pennies on the dollar if we're talking about Sam Vines, does that shows you what they thought of where their stock was at the time? And maybe that then speaks to the player that we have, that we have not yet seen, Mark, the 2021 version of Sam Vines that got called up, started at the Gold Cup, won the Gold Cup, and then made the move to Europe. I think we could be, Rapids fans could get caught up in romanticizing the idea of Jordi Mihailović or Zach Steffen because of what they've done with the national team, because of what they've done with other MLS teams, not necessarily with what they're doing right now. Not yet ready to say that about Zach Steffen. He's made several really big saves. Portland wasn't his fault for me. But that's something that I'm aware of, and I need to start seeing incremental improvement. I've seen incremental improvement with Oliver Larraz. I've seen incremental improvement from Moise Bompito. The three games between Jordi Mihailović are roughly the same. What's going on there? What's situational that he is improving on to where he's going to be better against Seattle? Because he needs to be better against Seattle. I think that's it as far as the bad things that I have. Mark, I'll go ahead with big thing. Yes. So the Rapids, who housed RSL, and they showed an incredible level of game savviness and maturity and composure and togetherness. And that's normally what RSL does to them. And Pablo Mascherini's Real Salt Lake in particular have been so good on that in terms of doing that against the Rapids. Cole Bassett had a really nice statement in the post-game media availability, Mark, where guys were yelling at each other. And he said normally that's not something he did a whole lot of last year, He's really good friends with a lot of the guys on the team, but he got under their skin, or he got after them in ways that he did not last year. And he said, you know, I got yelled at, and normally I'm not the one getting yelled at. You know, Cole Bassett was the one dragging the rotting corpse of the 2023 Colorado Rapids through so many of those terrible games in the middle of the summer last year, Mark. And so I can see where a fan looks at it and it's not going well, and RSL's, you know, got them under the gun, and RSL's about to score in the first half if you watch the replay. And at every single stoppage point, it cuts to a close-up of a Rapids player, and they're pointing, they're yelling at each other, there's confusion. And on the surface level, you could see lack of unity, you could see lack of organization, you could see lack of preparation, you could see that they're not all on the same page. And yes, that might be true, but at the very least, like, these guys have the willingness to, they have the gumption and the empowerment to try and figure it out. Mark, we're both, you're a casual Los Angeles Kings fan. Hockey's one of my other favorite sports. I'm a huge Kings fan. And I remember a really good quote from Dustin Brown, the now retired captain of the LA Kings, that he was talked about during one of the low points during one of the rebuilds that the Kings were going through when he was there. And he said, I'd rather be on a team with a bunch of guys who are willing to say, you know, who are willing to say screw you to my face and tell me how I'm messing up in order to be better, than a bunch of guys who are friendly with me and not willing to disrupt the friendship because they'd rather have the friendship than actually try to win something. I'm seeing now indications of a team that is willing to get in each other's face and hold each other accountable and be an a-hole in order to fix something, even if in the moment it hurts somebody's feelings or it makes somebody look bad in the moment because they're trying to prevent a goal being scored. And I can't understate this enough, Mark. A second ever win in Utah, the first one with real actual fans. I think RSL was having like limited capacity in 2020 under COVID. I think I remember their fans being there, but you know, the announced attendance was 20,000. I have to imagine there were more Rapids fans on Saturday than there were in that 5-0 drubbing of them in 2020. And just, it can't be understated how significant that is and how much dread the Rapids have around this fixture. And to go in and get a result in ways that they have never done before is absolutely fantastic. I'm not prepared to say that it's a rivalry yet, Mark. I think the Rapids at least have to win the Rocky Mountain Cup back in order to do it. But they are in a fantastic position to actually win, or at the very least make this this fixture competitive. And if you had told me that that was going to happen a week ago, 3 weeks ago, 3 months ago, I would have said absolutely not. I did not believe that the Rapids were capable of winning this game, Mark, until the full time whistle. And then even now in this moment talking to you, I still don't fully, I still cannot believe what I saw on Saturday, and I'm tempted to scratch my eyes. Mark, big things that you have.
A win is a win. I mean, getting a W is a big deal for this team, and you know, getting off the schneid to start the season is also just a thing. You know, we have talked about, especially in past seasons when things were not going well, that one of the things, it's, and if you go back far enough into the archives of this podcast, you'll find comments about this, but you'd be a lunatic to go through our archives. One of the things that's really interesting, and one of the things I feel very strongly about with professional athletics, is the margins are so, so thin. And it actually means that when sports writers write those dumb articles about how, like, the big Mo is with us and momentum is going well and the locker room is feeling and stuff like that, there's something to that, in that to some degree, a lot of, especially in MLS, a lot of these MLS teams are very close together in terms of quality of talent and between the players and the tactical identity of the team. So the differences between Portland and the Rapids, RSL and the Rapids, are really, really small. And, you know, mentality, you know, and going into the game with the right feeling and with confidence is a big, big deal. And I think a lot of the time, especially in 2023, we saw a Colorado Rapids team that was demoralized, that especially at the back end of the season for the final 14 games, probably felt like there wasn't much point to things, that they were hoping not to lose as opposed to going out there to win. And I think getting a win is a big deal. It's a statement win, as they say. As much as I'm generally an analytics and statistics and tactics guy, there is no denying the reality that a Colorado Rapids team that plays with togetherness and confidence, that earns a road win against a rival in a derby game, is a big, big deal. It brings the big Mo into the next couple games. To talk about a thing that Matt talked about in the last couple podcasts, the first seven games of this season are almost all against really difficult opponents. And getting, just squeaking out two wins and two draws out of seven matches would be a big deal. Well, we have a win and we have a draw. So we're moving in the right direction with this team. It feels very good. And I think these Colorado Rapids created a big moment for the team that they can go into the next match and feel really confident about.
Mark, we're going to talk about some breaking news concerning Ralph Preso, but first, tell our listeners how they can best support our sicko content, including the most almost deranged level of detail in researching things that are nebulous, but now the sorts of things exist so that when Rapids fans have questions about all the players who have played for both teams in the Rocky Mountain Cup, they have this type of content that we can just easily point them to.
Oh, yeah. You know, our buddy, Matt Pollard, who is, hallowed be thy name, who is a phenomenal writer and does amazing double shift work on both HTHL podcast and also Burgundy Wave as their, editor in chief and managing editor. I don't know if that's true. Matt, you can tell me if there's a managing editor and an editor. I think you're both.
Just,
right?
Just managing editor.
You're the man. CEO.
We don't need to discuss the org charts of either of these potentate outlets, Mark. You're still the union rep on the org chart, Rabbi.
Yeah. Prime Minister. Yeah, whatever you want to be. Anyways, he wrote a phenomenal article this last week on something we call Crossing the Continental Divide. It's a history of every single Colorado Rapids player who has played for RSL and every RSL player who's ever played for Colorado Rapids. There are names in there that you know. There are names in there that you don't. There are names in there that you've forgotten. There are details and little vignettes that are wonderful. It is an incredibly deeply researched piece. Highly recommended. Must view reading. You got to go there and check it out. When Matt's writing on fire, he is on fire. When I'm writing, I'm on fire over at the HDHL Substack. The HDHL Substack, transitioning to our second piece of important information, is the place where if you are a Highliner, a paid subscriber to the podcast, you can send in your request form to get your swag for 2024. And the swag for 2024 is a phenomenal performance t-shirt in either black or camo gray. We have packed the first, I think, 14 orders. They go out tomorrow with a few additional little stickers that we also made, and some additional background on how much we love our supporters. We had one size that we didn't order enough of, so we just, you know, dipped into our treasury and bought more. It's not financially responsible, but neither are me and Matt. We don't care. We want to make sure that our fans get their shirts in the right size. We also shipped out a couple of extra vintage from the back catalog in Mike We Trust t-shirts from the Mike Azira shirt we did a couple years ago. And I also thought, you know, these stickers are great and they're really cute, but it would be great if we made some bigger ones. So we have some 2-inch stickers that are going out to our listeners. We have some 4-inch stickers that are going out to our listeners. The 4-inch stickers arrive in the mail, hopefully later this week. We're blowing it out with the swag this year. We're spending all the money. So become a Highliner and you'll get some of the fun goodies that we've produced for you. You do it because you love the podcast. You do it because you love the Substack. But we want to reward you and thank you for doing that. You know, the reality, Matt, is if we continue to expand our subscriber base and the number of people who listen to the show, at some point we're going to, you know, gain enough financial backing and we'll be rich enough that we're just going to start shipping people 68-inch televisions. Like, we won't need we'll be rolling in it. We'll be doing so well that we won't need we'll just ask people to support the show and they'll wind up being able to live in the lap of luxury. That's not a promise, folks. That's just a what do you think? Maybe, you know, someday me or Matt will win the Powerball and we'll think like, 68-inch television for everybody. What the heck, you know?
Mark,
so anyhow, Point, Matt's like, no, if I win Powerball, you're not getting a 64-inch television. Anyways, point being, if you become a supporting Highliner by subscribing to us at the paid level of $48 a year or $5 a month, we'd be happy to send you out some swag this year. And for those Highliners who have already filled out the forms and have already subscribed, you'll be getting your shirt in the mail. The first batch goes out, I think, tomorrow, and then another batch will go out next week. So thank you all for supporting the work that we do of important citizen soccer journalism. Back to you, Matt.
Mark, if I ever become a billionaire, or if we ever have as many Highliners as there are just like bandwagon Manchester United fans, Manchester United fans from a few years ago, not right now, obviously, Fergie time, bandwagon Manchester United supportership around the world. If HDHL ever blows up like that, Mark, we will, and I'm a billionaire, I will fund and we will get like a burgundy Bugatti that we will give away to, that will raffle off to one of the Highliners. And
if
Mark,
if I ever become a billionaire, we're buying a football team. We're buying a fourth division football team, and everyone who's a current Highliner will get a board chairman of the board level, not chairman of the board, a board of directors level share of the controlling interest of the club, not financially per se, but they will be able to vote on all matters about the club. Now, of course, it'll be a semi-pro club, but we're going to climb that ladder, baby, and we're going to wind up in the first division, even if there's no pro rel in America. We're going to do it. We're going to crack it open.
I preemptively appoint Richard Terry and Rapids Foreign Legion to the Scran Committee. We're going to have a Scran Committee on the board there. Mark, last thing that I want to say, Rabbi, you will be sending me both of the size stickers because I've had a number of people ask about. So that is a tailgate giveaway. If you see me on match day, I will have them physically on me. And if you want one, I will give you. Okay, if I have like 40 of them, I'm not giving you 40. But until like I have single digit left, if you want at least three of both of them, I'll be happy to give you.
Every bathroom stall at Dick's Sporting Goods Park will be tagged with holding the Highline stickers.
We gotta have something. We gotta give something to people now that pretty much everybody's got the Way of Rapid Man swag out there, Mark.
Nice.
So Rabbi, just a few hours ago, Tom Bogert of The Athletic
is
reporting that Vancouver Whitecaps have acquired Canadian international midfielder Ralph Priso from the Colorado Rapids, and the package returning to the PIDs is a first and a third round pick. Bogert did not report on the years of those picks, so maybe one is 2025 and the other is 2026. And then there's some add-ons up to 150K in GAM, and then possibly a sell-on clause. I'm going to assume that probably has an expiration date, and that's probably a percentage, certainly 50 or less at the absolute most, for selling him outside of the league. Mark, Ralph Priso had a bit of an injury that limited him in preseason. He has not been listed on the availability report that MLS has been putting out, and he has not made the bench so far this year for the Rapids. Oliver Roz has gotten 3 starts, and that was after Priso got way more minutes for the first team. Oliver Roz did not appear for the first team off the top of my head, and Priso was at least a semi-regular under Robin Fraser. And then you combine that with Jasper Lofelson being on the bench now, replace Connor Ronan, and presumably at some point, Mark, if the Rapids are going to make a decision that has several zeros on the check for a purchase option on Lamine Diak, he's going to need to get minutes. So I see this as value. I don't know that Ralph Priso has gotten too much better as a player since joining the Rapids in, what, August of 2022. If memory serves, he's physical. He moves around. He did not do a whole lot on the ball. And the main interest that the Rapids had in bringing him on was he was a player who Robin Fraser identified because of the relationship that they had when Robin was an assistant for the first team in Toronto, and Priso was in the academy. Maybe he was a homegrown at that point. I can't remember. In any case, they knew each other. Now, if a Canadian team sees a value to you in a Canadian international, and they're willing to give you a first and a third round pick, which is like Porik Smith's favorite thing to get in a draft, and then GAM in case this works out, to where the Rapids can cover their butts in the case Ralph Priso works out, then I think the GAM is probably fair value if you add in the draft picks, regardless of what years those picks take place. And then if the sell-on clause is 25%, Mark, then, you know, if Ralph Priso just absolutely stonks it with the Vancouver Whitecaps, then the Rapids are covered in terms of the financial implications of that. Mark, your thoughts on this breaking news? Do you even care given the disappointment that Ralph Priso was last season?
You know, I just posted about this, and he's just buried in the depth chart at this point. I mean, I think a lot of us were surprised, especially since we didn't get to watch any of preseason. But even if we'd watched, we wouldn't really know what the depth chart was. But, you know, opening game, Ollie LaRaz comes out to start at defensive midfielder. And I think a lot of us said, huh, that's an interesting choice. We'll see how that goes. Maybe he's just being rewarded for a lot of his talent. And then he played the second game. And then he played the third game. And it was like, oh, our depth chart at defensive midfield is Connor Ronan and Ollie LaRaz, followed by Jasper Lofelson. And that means that Ralph Prizzo is at best our third or fourth choice on the depth chart. And that probably either didn't sit well with him, or even if it was like, you know, maybe I'll earn my way back into the team, an opportunity for Porik Smith to decide to offload valuable assets to somebody else. I don't think Ralph ever figured it out with this team. I don't think there was ever a game in 2023 where I said, oh, he was excellent, I'm really excited about him. There were games where I said, he has potential and we'll see, and games where I said, he was terrible and we gave up a goal because of something boneheaded that he did. You know, if I'm not mistaken, I'm trying to think back to, I think, the Philly game that he started, where we just got absolutely eviscerated and defenestrated. And Prizzo was like directly responsible in like 2 out of 6 goals. And, you know, could be partially responsible for the rest. It was just a hot mess.
He had the yips defensively as well, Mark, when he had a more defensive role, when it was Ronan being more offensive and then Prizzo being in that role that now Jasper Lofelson or Ollie LaRaz potentially are occupying. And like he had the yips defensively and gave up a couple penalties where I, as someone who was a Prizzo, who is patient for Prizzo.
Yeah, me
and
too.
Who was a Prizzo apologist at times. I was out on him after that Minnesota game. I thought he was the worst player on the team in the first half. So, you know, yeah. I just, if Vancouver wants him, I mean, I think Vancouver is really good, Mark. They could finish top 5 in the Supporters Shield. But, you know, we've seen like the Chris Sutter part in the scouting team have 5 guys at different positions that right now they could say are between draft pick 17 and the end of the first round. And I think that's a reasonable buffer in where Vancouver will finish this season that they could think that is the guy that we could pick up. And all of this is besides the fact, Mark, that if Prizzo's buried on the depth chart and they like where Ollie's at, they like where, and they're going to make a decision on Lamine Diok, then really they don't need to be thinking about that next holding midfielder position for another 6 months to a year, maybe. And in that, Prizzo is potentially going to be down with R2 this year, which doesn't do him any good. He needs to be on the first team, or he needs to be testing himself at a first team level to work out some of his issues. Then at that point, you're relegating Ralph Prizzo to be Wayne Frederick. So if you could get value for the Canadian that a Canadian team wants, and then just have Wayne Frederick be Wayne Frederick on Rapids 2, then you're okay. And then at this point, then the only question we have at the holding midfielder position, Mark, is what's up with Ronan's left knee, and then what's going on with Lamine Diok. And if one of those is a positive answer, Frederick can spend all of 2024 with Rapids 2. So again, like a first round pick, a little bit of GAM, and then a sell on clause just in case this trade goes horribly wrong in hindsight for the Rapids, I think it's fine. I would have taken less for him right now.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. I didn't think about that. I looked at a first and a third and I went, ooh, a first and a third. You know, I think a lot of people are poo-pooing the MLS super draft at this point. But look at the players we pulled out of the super draft in the last couple of years. I mean, Moise Bombito is a great example of this. And we haven't seen what's come out of what Nate Jones and Wayne Frederick and any of our other players have done. But, you know, there's value in the draft. The Rapids know how to work the draft. They're totally fine with trading up to go get players. And that's really, you know, something that Porik Smith has gotten really good at. He's captain. He's Mr. Arbitrage. You know, find value where it can be found and leverage it. So, and that's the super draft. So I think it's a win-win all around. I think it's really interesting, your point that we brought. You would have taken less. It is really going to be interesting. I think you also bring up the great point, and I will watch Vancouver for this very purpose of seeing, like, oh, you know, what's going to happen with them? By the way, on a semi-related note, Banfield plays Vélez Sarsfield tonight in Argentinian Copa del something or other.
Copa del, not Copa del Rey.
It's not Copa del Rey. It's Copa del something or other. It's their League Cup. And I'm interested. That game comes on later today, and I'm interested to see if Brian Galvan gets into that match because he's on Banfield's roster. But like, that's a thing. It's like, I will watch Vancouver to see whether the trade for Ralph Prizzo turns into something or not, whether it was a mistake or not.
And I will say, Mark, in hindsight, because I remember I'm one of the go-to guys that the Vancouver radio station, their equivalent of Altitude out there in Vancouver, TSN, and I can't remember the numbers, will reach out to me and preview them. And every single time there's a Canadian in the lineup, they will always ask about him. So they asked about Marc-Anthony Kaye. They've asked about Prisso. They've asked about Bombito.
Right.
And just, this is anecdotal, Mark, so maybe I'm misremembering this. I feel like in the games where Prisso played against Vancouver, he was good. I'm not saying then there that, you know, Vancouver hasn't done their scouting and they haven't watched the Minnesota gaffe or the Philly gaffe or, you know, games where, you know, he immediately turned the ball over and didn't do anything defensively, even though defensive work rate and physicality are the two things that you'd immediately associate with Prisso. But maybe there's something there. In any case, you know, good luck to Ralph Prisso. He was a nice guy to me from a media standpoint, even when I criticized him. And this is an article that I've been sitting on, Mark, that I think now will still have value with some of the players that they've brought in, with Kamani Stewart-Baines on. But there's a little contingency of a French connection on the team, even with Gersbach gone as well. And Prisso was a part of that and seemed to be positive. Good guy. He seemed to work hard. Whether or not he's good enough, I'm not sure. But we said the same thing about Dylan Cerna. We still like Dylan Cerna the person, and we're still rooting for him as a person. So I think, Mark, we can both root for Ralph Prisso, just not when the Caps play the Pits.
That's right. Well said.
Listeners, this upcoming Saturday, March 16th at 1:30 p.m. Mountain Time, the Colorado Rapids will be taking on Seattle Sounders. But, Matt, why are the Rapids playing at 1:30 instead of at 7:30? That's because Big Fox, who still somehow have MLS TV rights, love their afternoon games, and they love their afternoon games with the Sounders home game at a game in which they think that the Sounders are going to be really good to start the season. Mark, I won't go through the full standings for everybody because the Sounders only have 1 point, because officially they've just played two games. They got a 2-1 loss to LAFC to open the season. No shame in that for me. And then a 1-1 draw against Austin, where I thought they were absolutely the better team. They played Philadelphia Union over the weekend in Philadelphia, and that game got rained out to be played at a later date. So kind of hard to say. You've played two road games. One of them didn't even finish. You played at LAFC. You don't normally win at LAFC. And then you absolutely dominate in a game that luckily, you know, with St. Stuver was a 0-0 draw. Mark, do not take this lightly, listeners. Just because Nico Lodero is gone and Raul Ruiz Diaz is injured and out for the first half of the season and will not be playing in this game, we are still taking the Seattle Sounders seriously. Simplified, unnecessary rebrand in hand as far as their crest is concerned. So expect Jordan Morris to be up top in the number 9 role. Their big acquisition from this past offseason was young designated player, Argentinian number 10, Pedro de la Vega. He has absolutely good flow, and he is silky smooth on the ball, Mark. You would love this guy, comparing him to Lee Wynn, just lighter skin, obviously. The Roldan brothers play on the right, so if Brian Smetzer is doing the film review that I would expect him to be doing, I would expect them to try and do stuff on the right, vis-a-vis what we said earlier about Jordi Mihailovic and Sam Vines. That gives me some concern. Atencio and Vargas are in midfield as well, Mark. TBD on who's going to play at the left role. Leon Chu, kind of the Rapids equivalent of, I don't know, if Jonathan Lewis and Calvin Harris and Dylan Cerna were one player, but then also were an international player, but the fans still really loved, I guess that's Leo Chu. And then Jackson Reagan has been playing really well with Xavier Arriaga at the back. I should say Thomas was in goal for this game, Mark. I do not see on the bench that Stefan Fry was there. I didn't check the availability report for Seattle, so maybe the Swiss-American goalkeeper Stefan Fry is out for this game, and Nuhu Tolo is at the opposite fullback position alongside Alex Roldan, and is still a lovable, fantastic meme and someone who plays well against the Rapids, even though he only has one goal in MLS play. Mark, what do we see in the Seattle Sounders? What do the Rapids need to do on Saturday to get a result at the Clink?
So, looking at the betting line from the Philly-Seattle game, Seattle were big underdogs in that match. And I think that a lot of folks looked at their first two matches where they got a loss and a draw, especially against an Austin team that is almost the consensus pick for dead last in the Western Conference and thought something's wrong with Seattle. They haven't found their groove yet. Seattle, of course, for those who are longtime listeners to the pod or close watchers of Major League Soccer, are the first half of the season doesn't matter soccer team. They have a history of just kind of like floating through the first half of the season and not really worrying about it. A couple of years ago, they went out and did something pretty remarkable, which was win the CONCACAF Champions League for the first time really in MLS club history, and then proceed to poop the bed with regards to the actual regular season match. And I think they wound up finishing eighth that year. They might have even missed the playoffs. I don't remember. But that is a kind of an amazing thing that Seattle could be so ineffective in certain situations and so unbelievably devastatingly good in other situations. And so one might say that this is a great opportunity for the Colorado Rapids to go out and steal a win on the road. You know, the Clink is a tough place to play. I know, I've been there. It's a really intimidating facility. By comparison to Dick's Sporting Goods Park, it's kind of like the difference between, playing Nirvana playing at a club in downtown Seattle in 1987 in front of all their friends and family when they were 15-year-old boys, and playing Soldier Field. Like, it's a massive jump in terms of like the size of the situation. And I think that especially for young Colorado Rapids, that might be a challenge. I don't think Sam Vines is intimidated by anything anymore now that he's been at Royal Antwerp. I don't think Cole Bassett's intimidated anymore by anything. Oliver Roz and Moise Bombito might not be ready for prime time in that situation, but we'll see. I think the most important thing in terms of quality of players, Pedro de la Vega, as you've mentioned, the new addition to this team, still trying to fit into the vibe here, but there's a lot of talent on this team that are like really ready to pour it on. Jordan Morris, Nuhu Tolo, Yamar Gomez, Albert Rusnak, and the most impressive, I think, under the radar player they've added in the last couple of years is Jackson Reagan, who's their center back, who's been just phenomenal. And he grew up in the program. So they've got Jordan Morris and Jackson Reagan, who started playing with the Rave Green when they were little kids in the youth thing. The Rapids can, you know, go tit for tat on that with the aforementioned Vines and Bassett and Ollie LaRoz. By the way, I had the revelation, I think a couple of years ago, but I may not have said it ever on the podcast, that I think Ollie LaRoz and my own son, Yigal Chaim Goodman, have shared a soccer field at the same time, which is when Iggy was four, he played for the Colorado Rapids Youth Club, and they used to play at a field out in Lowry. And there were like literally like, you know, 500 kids out there. But they played all the way up to the U10s were out there. Iggy's now 13. LaRoz is, I think, 19. He might be 20. But if LaRoz and the U11s were out on the field at the same time, then Iggy and Ollie played at the same time on the same field. So, of course, Iggy was playing, you know, Storm the Pirate Ship kind of little games where you kicked it into the corner, and LaRoz was probably, you know, grinding out big results on a 7v7 field. So, but I remember walking over and watching the 7v7s of the U12s and the U11s, and I wish I'd, you know, known who I was talking to, or, you know, reached out and talked to a couple folks. So anyways, totally irrelevant story in comparison to Seattle, but I thought it was just kind of a cool thing. Like, oh, my son may have shared a field with Ollie Roz. So anyway,
all right, Mark.
I think the Rapids can get a result here. I think a 1-1 tie would be a great result.
Yeah, I'd agree with you. I'd bite both of our arms off right now, Mark. For a 1-1 draw. I'm tempted to lean towards a loss on this one, because I still think, you know, Seattle afternoon crowd, Clink's going to be absolutely jumping bright and early and everything. And Seattle normally gets up for those games. And so you've got a team that I think is going to be really frustrated with where they are on the table. They're going to be really frustrated that they didn't play a proper game last Saturday. They're obviously fresh.
The flip side of that is rust, right?
Yeah. I mean, possibly, but Brian Smetstern, with how veteran that team is and everything, I don't think that's something to be concerned about. But I think I think that they're going to come out knowing that they want to get a result in this game. And we juxtapose that with the concerns that we have about the lack of intensity that the Rapids have had to start halves and on the whole of the 90 minutes. That's my biggest concern. If the Rapids can come out and they can match that intensity, they got a little spooked against Portland. And while I agree with you that Sam Vines and Cole Bassett won't necessarily be scared from that from their European time there, from their times going to Seattle, going to Portland, going to Atlanta previously, you know, I'm wondering, does Moise Bombito maybe have that kind of energy? I guess Jasper Lofelson has played there previously, but Ollie the Roz hasn't quite experienced that yet. Rafael Navajo is still new to the league. Does he understand that, you know, this is the, I don't know what the Brazilian equivalent to that in terms of atmosphere would be as well? So those are the concerns that I have. I'm going to lean Rapids loss, and I'm not just saying that because the Rapids lost last, because I predicted a loss last week and then they ended up winning. Mark, we've only got a couple minutes here left because I've got a commitment at the 30-minute mark. So let's go through some Ask HTHL. So first, I will throw it to you, Mark. Addison H. asks, are you less optimistic, more optimistic, or neutral about our season after the first three games? Rapids, thumbs up, thumbs down, thumbs sideways.
It's really not what I expected. I mean, that's a great question. It's really a good question, and I wasn't expecting it. It's not what I expected in the sense that I expected that this team would be like a 500 ball club by the end of the year, but I thought that it would be kind of dull and plodding and cautious at the beginning. I think that the season's been uneven after three games, like getting schwacked in Portland and following that up with a grinding result in Nashville, and then a surprising result at RSL, I wouldn't have called any of that. If you said to me, what do you think will happen in these three games, Rabbi? I would have said, we're going to win at Portland, we're going to lose at Nashville, and we'll draw at RSL. And it was the exact opposite on all of those. Ultimately saying, we'll be 1-1-1 after three games, I would have expected it, but not the way it looked and not how it came down. I think I'm still disappointed in Navajo. I think I'm still trying to figure out what the young players are going to do. Matt, your thoughts? Are you going to take the next one?
I'm neutral on this one, to be honest. I don't feel any different than I do about this team. I need more information, Addison. I do not judge teams relative to what my preseason predictions were until probably 10 games into the season, 7 at the absolute minimum. Dustin asks, can the purchase option on Rafa's loan be renegotiated? So the purchase option cannot be renegotiated, Dustin. That is at the $4.5 million, as I and others have reported. What can be done differently is the Rapids can choose not to exercise that option, let it expire, and then go to the negotiating table and then try and negotiate something less. We've seen Porik Smith do this in the time past. He did it with Yarbrough. He did it with Illich. He did it with, I can't remember who else was on that list as well, and he's done it, and it's been successful in that the transfer has ultimately come through. He's done it and it not be successful in that Yunus Nnamdi goes back to Europe. So TBD, I'm not sure. We need more information before I determine whether or not he's of that value. And then Judgmental Jim asks, is Bombito the greatest draft pick we've had? Nuff said, Well, Jim, on some level, this is based on our expectations. And so for a fourth round super draft pick to get almost 10 goal contributions in the season, be an MLS veteran, ultimately win a supporter shield, and craft out a professional full career when normally he would, when normally you would expect him to show up to camp and get cut later in the week. For me, from a narrative and emotional standpoint, Dominic Baggi is the greatest draft pick in the history of the Colorado Rapids. If we are talking about a guy who contributes in the first year of in his first year with the team, becomes a regular for the team, and then has resale value eventually, we have to look at the two rookies of the year in Deshaun Brown and Andre Shinyashiki. I think we have to see Bombito achieve the potential that we've told he has, I think, before we're ready to say that. If the Rapids sell him for, you know, 6-7 figures in a couple of years, and he's a starter on the Canadian men's national team at the 2026 World Cup, and he does stuff in Europe, and that is on the backs of making the Rapids whole on the field and in the wallet, then absolutely that's a conversation that we can have later at that time. Like the other question, TBD. Listeners, follow us individually on Twitter at @soccer_rabbi, at LWS Matt Pollard, and at Rapids96Podcast. Rate, review, share, subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. If we're not on a platform you'd like us to be on, let us know and we'll do our best to get on there. Tweet us your questions using the hashtag AskHTHL or comment on one of the tweets that we send out. Email us in long form at rapids96podcast@gmail.com and check out Mark's written content at the Substack, holdingthehighline.substack.com. Rabbi, anything else?
Peace! There's two buttons, and the larger button says leave meeting, and okay. I hit the larger button. You shouldn't hit the larger button. You should hit the smaller button.